drop goal!
It's over! They've done it! Evans has done it!
Bonjour, mes amis. Welcome to another episode of Two Words, Four Quarters, a Harlequins podcast. What a special, special day in Bordeaux this weekend. We cannot wait to dive into it. My name is Will, and as always, I'm joined by my cousin, Michael. Mike, I've been asleep all day, so it feels like yesterday when I last saw you, but it was actually 8 a.m. How are you doing? Good day?
Mate, I'm in pieces. I am in pieces. I mean, what time do we get back this morning?
Back through the door in Teddington about 10:30. And I drifted off to sleep, had a shower, sorted myself out, and I woke up to watch Exeter Toulouse. And I'm in bits, mate. I'm in absolute bits, but I wouldn't have it any other way. It was a special, special day. And it was worth it. Obviously, we've got plenty to talk about. And it's been a bit of a roller coaster week on a few levels. But yeah, it's come down now. And well, it does feel like a bit of a come down now, but
it does, yeah.
We've got more to look forward to, though.
I'm a little bit worse for wear.
I'm in pieces, mate.
When we landed at Gatwick, I was thinking, great, I'll just jump on a train to Clapham Junction. Of course,
I know.
To Clapham Junction. So it was a bit of a pilgrimage home as well, which was the last thing we needed after not having a hotel. So I've been asleep all day. I am absolutely knackered, but oh my God, our greatest ever day in Europe.
Yeah.
Wow, mate, do you realise what we've just been a part of? One of the great away days, club history made, 24 hours in Bordeaux, rock and roll, no sleep club. It's been special.
That's what we were getting tagged, wasn't it? Me, you and Uncle Nick, the no sleep, the no hotel gang.
Yeah. What were we thinking?
I don't know, honestly.
I can't figure out if we regret it.
I don't know.
I did about 80 quid each. I think that was a good decision.
It felt like such a good decision at the time. Obviously, look, we'll do deep dives into all of this. It felt like a great decision at the time. And then at 1 a.m. on the airport floor at Bordeaux, I was less inclined. But yeah. Should we start from the start of the week? Because I actually had a bit of a... Well, I don't know how to put it, but I had to do... some extra work this week to make sure that I could finance my trip. And a few people did reach out after I mentioned it on the pod last week. And obviously I'm on Easter holidays at the minute. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I was helping out my mate who's a landscape gardener, and I was bending the back, digging, shoveling, pointing, all this sort of stuff to give me some extra money. And every paving stone, sandstone slab that I picked up and plopped down on this garden bed and had bamboo shoots growing out and all those sort of things. Every time I did it, I thought I'm just one step closer to the weekend. Yeah. It was a long week. My back is in pieces. I'm not as fit as I used to be, but Jesus Christ. It's a tough gig doing that sort of stuff, especially as a delicate little teacher like I am, but it was absolutely worth it. And it made sure I could buy you and Uncle Nick a few beers this weekend. So yeah, it was a long old week, but it was worth it. Absolutely worth it.
He was probably our man of the match, wasn't he?
Oh, my God. So, right, this is...
Three years old, 1:30 a.m, sleeping on a sofa in what's the French equivalent of like a Starbucks or something in the airport. Everything is closed.
Everything.
There's no flights. The security gates are closed. And all the shops are closed. All the cafes are closed. It felt a bit weird, didn't it? I felt like I was in the Call of Duty map. Abandoned airport terminal.
So this is funny, right? So... Obviously, we were at Glasgow on the Friday night. Saturday comes. I'm actually at Spencer Hockey Club, having a few beers, watching the game on my phone. And, you know, Bordeaux are absolutely pumping Saracens, and we're all looking at bookings, and we're looking at the Friday and the Saturday, and can we come back on the Sunday? And, you know, what about this and what about that? And then, you know, Uncle Nick sends through the flight for, well, we can do Saturday morning and then Sunday morning again. I was like, yeah, that looks good. That looks good. What do you reckon then, one night in the hotel, which one do you reckon is the best one? And he goes, well, we probably don't need the hotel, do we? If we're going to be on the 7 a.m. flight, we'll have to be at the airport for sort of 5:30. So we may as well just go through. And I've gone, all right, great. That sounds
good.
You're cool
with that then, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, 63 years old, Uncle Nick. If you're all right with it, I'm all right with it. And he was probably the one carrying us through, mate, because it got to about midnight and I was in absolute pieces and he was still there chopping away.
As soon as he lay horizontal on that little padded sofa, he was gone to the
world. Yeah, he was an absolute goner, wasn't he?
he was my man of the match of the weekend. But yeah, hats off to you as well. I know how excited you were for this weekend, and you put it in this week. Bit of hard graft, manual labour, cash in hand, get it done.
But should we tell some stories? Because obviously, you know, Saturday morning came, So you went back up to Marlow, back up to your old man's, got the lift down in the morning. I went down to Lewis, East Sussex, where my mum lives on Friday night. So my day started at about 3:15 Saturday morning. Got to the airport about 4:15.
Yeah, I think most of the Quins fans, well, not most of the Quins fans, but a lot of Quins fans were on that early morning Saturday, the 6:25 from Gatwick. So it was a good to arrive and see strength in numbers. Everybody kind of bought in, although a lot of people, I thought there might be a few other people that think, right, we can do this in 24 hours. But everybody was kind of mind blown by it. And it did make me think, is this a mistake? Everyone's like, where are your bags? It's like, well, we just come. My passport's in my pocket. My phone's in the other one. I've left my keys in my jacket. I don't need it.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like,
I had like a rucksack for the night before and I put it in the boot of your old man's car. And people are looking at us going, oh, have you left your bag on the plane? I'm like, well, no. I got one. I was like, I had my wallet and my passport in my pocket. I had my headphones, my phone charger, a little French adapter.
Yeah.
And my sunglasses, and that was it.
Portable charger, and I had an inflatable trophy as well. It wasn't blown up at this point, obviously, no. But I saved it for the stadium, blew it up, and it was a nice little addition to all the flags that the club kindly brought as well. And I think it was Charlie Matthews' kids that ended up the inflatable trophy.
Did you not see the photo on social media?
Yes, there's a brilliant, brilliant clip of them on the pitch with the trophy at the end of the day. And I'm thinking, yes, I feel like I've done good today.
Yeah, absolutely.
A little gesture. And I'm pleased the trophy made it onto the pitch. But it's become a bit of a tradition now, hasn't it? Get one of those little £5 inflatable trophies for any European away day, and it comes with us. Before we get into the rest of the travel plans, should we sort of round off the rest of this week as well and what else has gone on? So,
go on.
If any listeners were involved with Manchester Marathon, which took place this weekend, whether you were running it or whether you donated or volunteering, whatever you're doing, massive congratulations. And next weekend is the London Marathon. So it's marathon season now, isn't it? And Harlequins fan James Whistler is running it, and he is attempting to become the fastest Harlequin to ever run the London Marathon in 3 hours and 51 minutes, I think is the current record. And yes, can you believe that is actually a record? Somebody has run the marathon before dressed as a Harlequin and set a world record. So he's gunning for that. He's running for the Harlequins Foundation amidst other charities as well. So if you're listening and you want to get behind something like that, James, massive good luck. So cool that you're doing it sort of with the club in mind, not only in what you're wearing, but where the money's going as well. We'll drop a link to his donation link on our Instagram stories this week, so you can get behind that too.
Yeah, mega. He actually he messaged over the weekend, and I just thought, I saw loads of people doing the Landmark Half. I saw a few people doing the Brighton Marathon.
Quite cool, isn't it, the Landmark Half? I didn't know that was a thing. Yeah. That's something I might give a go.
Eyebrows.
Oh, I didn't say when. In the next 5 years, I reckon.
Amazing.
It's running a little bit more, actually.
After the evening in the Harlequins Hospitality Foundation box on Friday, now we know a little bit more about it. The fact that we know James is running it for the foundation amidst other things is amazing. So we'll get behind that for sure.
Absolutely. And it felt like a bit of a marathon for us this weekend. Oh, we billed it as 24 hours in Bordeaux, but by the time I got home, I think it had been about 30-odd. So,
yeah, well, I haven't crunched the numbers on that, but if I did door-to-door 3 a.m. till 10 a.m., or whatever it is, 33, 34, 35.
Who cares anyway?
Yeah.
All totally worth it. An unbelievable day. I've got a bit of a tan going on. I think you caught the sun a little bit as well, but only on the left-hand side. Sunglasses tan line. But we touched down in Bordeaux. It must have been about 8 a.m., give or take an hour. Who knows? Who cares at this point? And we were straight on the tram. I think it was about 40 minutes into the centre of Bordeaux, up along the riverfront, bar after bar after bar. I could have crawled all the way along, but we made a beeline for the Union Bordeaux Begler Clubhouse, which was a very cool bar that they seem to own and actually have a club shop in it as well. And some of the merch in the club, very, very nice. The bucket hats, the berets, they had these big biker jackets and bomber jackets, some lovely polos. It's like they've almost made their club's brand and made a bit of a fashion spin-off of it, which was very cool. But we were in there very early doors, Didn't know if it was going to be open, but it was open at about 10:30, 11, I think, was when we had our first beer. Sat in the glorious sunshine for hours, and we just started to grow and grow and grow. There were six of us in there to start with. By the time we left and departed for the game, I think there was about 70, 80, I would say, is a good guess. And we all jump on the tram, start singing songs on the tram. You're then walking up to the ground, get the beers in. There's a real atmosphere about it. And I'm walking out the little tunnel area that overlooks the entire pitch in one of the corners. There's not a single fan in the ground at this point. And it just had a feeling of an upset, didn't it? The weather conditions, the European away days, the fan atmosphere that we had behind us. We even put a post out saying it stinks of an upset. And the boys started well.
Yeah, that the Bodega Clubhouse is pretty special, isn't it? Some of the merch, the setting down the river, all of it was pretty special. And then, yeah, we get in the ground. Before we get onto the game, should we do some selection chat? Because there's a little bit of chat this week about people missing, people in, people out. The two big omissions, Danny and Joe Marler. We are sort of semi-led to believe that that's enforced rest periods. You know, they're both in the toilet of their careers. And
well, Billy Millard said in the pre-match interview that they were both carrying knocks, both had slightly different injuries.
Okay.
Plus, I mean, as you say, twilight of their careers, rest them, use them sparingly. And yeah. Fast forward 80 minutes, Finn Baxter and Will Porter. Oh. We kind of knew Finn Baxter's coming of age has been over a sustained period of time now. Everyone knows he's the next kid on the block. He is the real deal. We're seeing it now.
Yeah.
We saw it in European games previously, and we saw it this weekend. He was colossal. He was unbelievable, just melting people in the contact, destroying people at scrum time. Fitting in for Joe didn't necessarily feel like a negative. It was just sort of those last 20 minutes would be quite nice to have Joe Marler off the bench, knowing how good he was at doing that for England. So that was the only kind of sort of nervousness about it. But we know Finn's young, he's fit, and he can go a long way into the 80. So I don't actually know how long he lasted in the end, but I think he got a good 65 minutes, didn't he?
I think something along those lines, yeah. I need to check the stat sheet. But also, you know, as you said, big incomings alongside Will Porter was Chandler Cunningham South back in the back row. Sam Riley, Simon Kerrod on the bench. We obviously saw that Joe Launchbury was out with what looked like, well, we were led to believe some sort of hamstring niggle that he picked up, maybe in the warm-up.
I knew he failed a late fitness test was the words that we used on Twitter.
Okay, so that's good. I mean, that's, well, that's good or bad, we don't know. But Ernie went straight into the starting second row slot, and Will Trenholm, you know, filled that position on the bench, who
again probably deserved in the last few weeks.
Yeah, deserved to go, didn't he?
This is what I mean. There was a big media fuss made, wasn't there, about Danny and Joe and how it's, I mean, not even particularly just Harlequins, but a lot of people were talking about the Bulls team this week and how they had to get eight different flights and they sent out a second team and it was a disgrace to the competition, and people were starting to throw our name in that ring as well for resting Danny and Joe. Will Porter, we know, is a very good player and was signed because he was going to start to take more minutes from Danny. But that's the best game I've seen him play for Harlequins, without a doubt. And I think we're going to see a lot more of Will Porter in the second part of this season and also a lot more next season as well. I think Danny's been excellent. I'd have loved to, again, similar to Joe, I'd have loved to have had him on the bench for sort of the final 15, 20 minutes if needed, like he did for England. And knowing how smart he is and the experience those two bring, I think it's over 600 Harlequins appearances between them. Just unrivaled experience and know-how, particularly in those dying embers of the game where it was on a knife edge. But the boys got the job done anyway. So where does that leave the squad now with Danny and Joe? Do they come straight back in for sale? I think they probably do, because I think you've got to rotate a few others. But a really interesting selection debate this week, wasn't it? And
yeah,
you've just got such a good squad to play with at the moment that it didn't feel like it was a massive loss either way. But at the same time, it was, when it comes to those last few moments, and you need that experience.
Big bit of selection on the Bordeaux side as well. No Damien Poineau.
Yeah, or Jefferson Poirot, their prop, which might have been quite important for them as it turned.
Well, yeah.
But Poineau was an interesting one, wasn't it? And again, like I said earlier, when you're in the ground and you walk out and you see the pitch, you see the stadium, beautiful weather, you've got the buzz of an away day and you think there might be an upset, that's also fueled by what you see on their team sheet. And knowing they're missing two big players, it just gives you that little extra percentage, doesn't it? It gives you that extra 1% actually, whoever you're going to be playing against is going to be bloody good, because Bordeaux are good and you're in a European quarterfinal. However, Damien Penno is world-class, walks into any world team. He's unbelievable. So yeah, that was a useful boost as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh, massive, absolutely massive. I mean, even mate, you talk about before game, even before the game, my emotions were starting to get a little bit fried. It was quite cool actually when we were sort of getting sat into our seats. Not quite sure what the official number was actually of people that travelled over, but we sort of had a rough guess. There was somewhere between sort of 500 and 600, I reckon,
I think so, yeah.
Amazing. But just before the game, we'll give a little shout out to Tom Salisbury, who works in the club, who was linking up with a few of the staff that had just come over and travelled and bought over two or three boxes of about 500 Harlequins flags.
Yeah, which is so important, aren't they?
Yeah, massive, because they were Bordeaux flags all over the ground, one of which I've actually managed to bring home with me as well. But yeah.
Also, there were a few, I mean, there was a lot of tries to celebrate and turnovers and penalties, and scrubs, especially scrum penalties.
Oh my God, we'll talk about the scrum, won't we?
It got to the point where I remember screaming at one point, thinking I'm going to pass out in a minute. It's so I can feel myself sort of starting to stutter.
Yeah.
And that flag became quite helpful because it meant I just need to take a breather for the next time we're celebrating something. I'll just wear my flag instead.
But should we touch on the game? Because it was a fast start, wasn't it? And just the start we needed, you know, in these games. And it's weird, actually, because we've been... The year that we won the Prem, right, we always seem to start quite slowly and then find our feet towards the second half. But this season, at times, when we played our best rugby, we've almost been fast starters and dropping off in the second half. But the first try is beautiful, isn't it? It's just a bit of smart play on Andre Esterhazen, a bit sort of fleet of foot down that left touchline just in front of where we were. It wasn't particularly, you know, the big ball-carrying sort of nature of what we're used to seeing from him. But he finds a bit of a gap, feeds Will Porter, run under the six in the first couple of minutes, which is pretty good.
Yeah, fast start was needed to silence the crowd and sort of add to their nerves as well. They looked nervous. They made a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes. So it was a fantastic first score. And I think that's where we see the best of Andre's rugby IQ as well. But that rugby, off the cuff, gallops down the left-hand touchline, puts Will Porter in, and there's almost a stunned silence when we start to throw our first limbs of the day.
Awesome for Will Porter as well, just to get himself on the score sheet and settle probably some of his nerves. Been out of the side for a while. So just to get his hands on the ball early, and B, just to, you know, find his feet in the game and get on the score sheet, probably made him feel, you know, 10 feet taller.
Wow. And maybe you see that in his second score when we get to it. But the chip and chase was just magnificent. And you do wonder, when a player's playing with confidence, those things seem to stick, don't they?
Well, you say the second score there, but it was actually the third score, wasn't it? Because the second
His second score, sorry, right.
But our second score isn't actually put down by anyone, is it?
No, not long after was the penalty try, wasn't it? And it was clear as day. I think
no arguments.
The players knew it. Marcus and Tyrone started celebrating like one of them had actually scored.
That's so good. As soon as the ball hits it was Garcia's hand, and the blow referee started, Marcus like wheels off, start pumping the air with his hand. Yeah, that's a try. I wasn't even concerned about it. It looked like he scored himself.
No, and too right as well. If you know the rules and have played as much as they've played, they know when they're in those positions. I mean, we've had a yellow card last week, didn't we, against Glasgow for something similar?
Yeah.
So it was inevitable. And Green would have been over in the corner anyway. He might be a bit gutted that he didn't get the try against his name, but... What is fascinating here is the full-time score is a one-point win. Naturally, with a penalty try, you get the full seven just
gives
you. How important could those extra 2 points have been? With a tricky touchline conversion, tricky when you're a right-footed kicker.
And on that right edge,
That's the trickiest kick you can have. And 2 points might have been the difference between winning and losing. So, small details here.
And also, it was their fly half, wasn't it? It was Garcia, who everyone was talking quite highly about against Saracens. I actually sent a ridiculously biased one-eyed text message during the week saying that I thought he looked nervous against Saracens. But obviously, he didn't. He looked fantastic. But yeah, it just, you know, you lose your focal point of the attack early in the game. Bit annoying that actually they then go and score still when we've got that man advantage from the set piece. Luke, who gets down in the corner, doesn't he?
They do, but we'd actually drained that full 10-minute sin bin. We did score. Obviously, there wasn't a break in play, so we were still down. But to survive those 10 minutes the way we did and only really concede right at the end, and it was through a little snipe in the bottom left corner that, I mean, a bit of sustained pressure. They're a good side. Luku heads up rugby, smart rugby IQ.
Yeah.
Porter a little bit unlucky to already be on the floor, but it was...
Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it? What do you reckon to that?
I thought it was legitimate. I thought it was fine. Yeah, I've watched the replays back. He was part of the ruck, got cleared out.
Yeah.
Things got cleared out so hard that he was miles away from the ruck by the end of it. It looked like he'd been off the ball, couldn't it? And that would have been brilliant if that was ruled out. But
I think generally, if he stood, if his feet are 6 inches behind where he stood at the time that I think it's Beery that gets hold of him.
That's a back row, I think. Or
is it?
Or somebody. Yeah, it's a big boy because he knocks him back a long old way.
Oh, yes. No, you are right. But yeah, if he stood 6 inches behind from where he stood at the time, he's then sort of not part of that ruck, but he just sort of nudges on it and it looks like he's a part of it. But, you know, one of those ones where you think you're hard done by if it's you, but if we're being really sort of fair and honest with ourselves, if it had happened so well, we'd have probably, you know, argued the case for. So you can't really be so upset by it.
And one point on that as well is Steph obviously asked him to take a look at
this.
This
is really good, actually. I've watched it since. Brilliant. I know what you're going to say. Yeah,
captaincy, yeah, because they'd given it, there was a little bit of doubt. And we saw it on the big screen as well, but we weren't quite sure. Obviously, we were looking at it from a long way away. Steph asked the question. He has a look. It's a valid question to ask. They spend a bit of time pondering it. I think they get to the right decision. And at the end of it, Steph just says, well, thanks for looking anyway.
Yeah, really,
really good captaincy.
100%. And that's obviously something you don't see when you're in the ground, is it? But having watched it on the way back, you think, do you know what? That's proper captaincy. That I think is really, really good.
But also, if that had been chalked off, their tails are down again.
Yeah.
We then return to 15. That's a double whammy, isn't it? They get the try ruled out and we get a man back on. So it would have been brilliant if that had come off. But unfortunately not to be. And unfortunately, it wasn't much longer until their second try came in, was it?
Yeah, what do you think of this one then?
I mean, I feel like they would have scored anyway. They had a lot of numbers and a lot of space to play with. They had the full right-hand side of the pitch, didn't they? But I thought Ty got underneath him.
I think you're right. I think Ty does actually initially get underneath him, but I think it's just that little second nudge that gets it over the line and it looks legitimate. One thing that actually wasn't looked at, which I've watched sort of retrospectively, there's an argument that Tamofina has taken Baxter off the ball. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't seen that.
I'm watching it now on my phone. It just, after the breakdown before actually they score, Baxter's sort of wheeling behind the breakdown to sort of get back in the defensive line, and Tamofina just sort of carries his weight through and almost tackles him completely off the ball. I don't think the ball's actually going to go anywhere near Baxter. It's probably two men between where he is and actually where the try ends up. But you wonder. It's
the defensive line, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And you do
probably
wonder.
Probably the only time Tamofina actually managed to get the better of
exactly.
Baxter. So we'll
exactly. Exactly.
Come on, Finn!
Exactly. But, yeah, well you know, again, I don't think it would have stopped to try, but it certainly, like you say, just disrupts that little bit of defensive patterning that you have. But there we go.
I don't know how many times you're allowed to have a go at putting the ball down, but I thought Ty got underneath him for long enough that the second attempt would have not counted. But what do I know about the rules?
Yeah, not much. But this next try is where it starts to get a little bit spicy for us, isn't it? And do you know what's weird about this, right?
What I like about this, before you go on and say what I think you're about to say, is after that try and it gets to 14-12, Le Marseillais starts to ring around the stadium, like, fully loud as well. And this never happens at English rugby games. No one starts singing God Save the King.
Yeah.
But the national anthem rings around. And a few moments later, Alex Dombrandt cuts a typically Dommers line, gets good yardage, throws a delicious offload that not many number eights can do, but he is one of them. And Porter just puts up the perfect chip and chase, and we've silenced them again from Le Marseillais ringing around the ground to just dead silence, and then the mighty Quinns bellowing out. It was quite a nice poetic transition of fandom there.
Yeah, but what I was going to say, and actually I think I remember leaning into you and Uncle Nick at the time, I did actually just say we haven't really seen Dombrandt put his stamp on the game yet, and we're sort of half an hour in at this stage.
Yeah.
We were just waiting for something from Dom, and obviously he's involved all over the place, but we haven't seen him.
I know what you mean.
Really make that
Dombrandt
exactly right, exactly. And then literally 30 seconds after it happens, it's a wonderful break. It's a brilliant offload, and Porter puts this, like you say, just puts that kick up, pins the ears back, and dots it down, and it's just
30 minutes gone at this point.
I know, and there's so much rugby that's happened.
There's enough to fill a full 80 there.
I know. But also the try before half-time is so important, isn't it? Because at this stage, we're 21-12.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable game management, but also just, it must have been so tricky to pick him out of the match. The amount of people that put their hands up. But 37 minutes on the clock. It's scrum time, bang in the middle of the pitch, just inside our own half. We make absolute mincemeat of them again, win the penalty, go to the 22, and that sets up the foundation for this try. So, I mean, we can talk about Will Evans as well, the way he sniped and managed to take that pick and go and dive it down before they were even set. Their players weren't even looking at him. Unbelievable bit of play just to have a bit of rugby IQ again. I'm going to say it a lot throughout this episode. There was a lot of rugby IQ this weekend, and off the cuff, Quinn style, like where speed beats structure, that's how you get your points. It was the perfect example, but it was all reaping the reward of that scrum.
Yeah. I mean, we'd already seen Will Evans' impact on the game. That turnover on about the 15-minute mark after a really sort of messy bit of play, and Wev just get, you know, a lot of chat actually this week about Wev. There's been a few news articles out and people, wider sort of hemisphere and landscape of rugby, you know, leading turnovers in Europe and all that sort of stuff, and bits about how he used to think about England and all that other stuff, which we could talk about for hours, but we won't. But you see his impact on the game so quickly. That turnover in about the 15th minute.
Oh, yeah.
Once he makes that turnover, when he makes that turnover, turns to the crowd, gives it some beans, gets that score just before half time. And again, the referee sort of doesn't quite give it straight away. And a little bit like with the penalty try, Webb just sticks his arms up in the air, starts winning away as if he scored. And at that point, we were all sort of sat there going, Webb likes it, Webb likes it. And he's not the sort of person to coax the referee into thinking he has when he hasn't. But you sort of see it, you can see it on his face and see it in his eyes that he believed he scored. And at that point, you feel
great. If he knows, you know,
Yeah, absolutely. So that was amazing. And then,
I remember you turning to me saying, Webb likes it, Webb likes
it. Yeah, well, that's what I was doing. I was pointing, going, Webb likes it, he likes it, he likes it. So yeah, that was amazing, mate. And then, I mean, half time. Jesus Christ, how are you feeling? I was so nervous at halftime, I had to go and get another pitcher of beer just to settle the nerves.
I was glad I got my pitcher before the game because the queue was so long, I thought I might miss the first minute here, but I got back just in time. And then I thought halftime, that queue's going to be disgusting. So I'm glad you got that one instead.
To be fair to them, to be fair, not much actually on offer in the Stade Chaban Delmas, but to be fair, when I went down at halftime, I was towards the back of the queue and I thought, I'm not sure, I'll see how quick it moves. And to be fair, they had plenty of beers poured, they had plenty of pitchers poured, and actually it moved quite quickly, to be fair to them.
Yeah, too right. I mean, it's a shame it was all Carlsberg of all the choices.
Yeah, it wasn't the best, was it?
It all goes in the same place.
Yes, it does.
Halftime, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good because I think all of the sort of, is it delusion or is it belief? Is it, I don't know what it is as a fan, but on an away day, you just think, you can't lose.
You want to believe, don't you? Yeah, you want to believe.
You want to believe. It's why you're there. You want to be part of it. You want to enjoy it. And we could have got slapped by 30 points. I still think we would have believed.
Yeah.
And we would have celebrated a try like it was a winning try if they'd beaten us like they'd beaten Saracens. I still think we'd have celebrated the scores. But when you're 28-12 ahead, you just think, actually, I don't want to believe yet.
I know.
I don't want to believe it yet because it is quite plausible that this could happen. And I mean, 28-12 is a big lead. Big lead. And
you know what?
They needed to get in at halftime and reset Bordeaux. So,
yeah.
And you know how good they are. They're on.
Yeah.
So you just don't know. And we've got history with Bath and Glasgow where from minute 40 to minute 60, we just let teams back in. So I was never quite sure, but I felt we have got an unbelievable squad too. And we're playing some brilliant stuff. We've got the crowd on our side. We've got the ref, I thought, on our side as well. I thought we managed the ref.
For the most part,
But he ref well, but maybe that's just because we won. What are you thinking, though?
Well, this is the thing. At halftime, I didn't really have time to reflect because I was so busy trying to rush down to the beer queue to make sure that we were... Yeah. You know, it was a hot day. You got to make sure you're taking plenty of fluids on board. And actually, I was talking to...
I'm sure it's Carlsberg, but
I was talking to a few of the Bordeaux fans in the queue with my limited French. And I was asking, "Oh, did you like Saracens? Did you like Saracens?" They said, "Oh no." And I said, "Ah, je déteste le Saracen. Je déteste le Saracen." And I'm going, really? "J'adore." Well, that's what I was saying. Sorry.
Oh,
I was telling them how much I hate Saris, but just that they were all very, very sweet, very, very lovely, and they were all sort of quite impressed that we were all there making lots of noise. And again, I literally got back into my seat as the second half was kicking off, so I timed it pretty perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, let's get into the second half because, as we just mentioned there, minute 40 to minute 60 tends to be a tricky period for us, and it proved that way again, didn't it? Let them back in.
How good's the pickup from Deportee, by the way? Unbelievable.
I mean, this barely is what even, I'm saying, barely well, like, even they are so good, aren't they?
But like, he barely even breaks stride and like changes the speed that he's running and picks the ball off his shoelaces. Unbelievable bit of athleticism.
He does also have like a little bit of a stutter as he picks it up and tries to regain his feet, and he still manages to stretch away from Tyrone Green. And
yeah,
to be fair, I thought Green did excellently to push him all the way out to the corner flag.
Yeah, that was important, wasn't it, as well?
It was. I mean, the kick still went over anyway, but...
Yeah, it's small details.
You do what you can. The way that try comes about, by the way, is just turnover after turnover after turnover in the first few minutes of the second half. Lots of loose play. I thought Wacker won a really good, clean turnover at one point and just managed to lose it off his fingertips. And then it's not long after that they go and get over the line. So it's really fine margins again. But it applies both ways, and they're too good, and they manage to first score. And when they get that first score, the crowd gets loud, and that's when it starts to think, right, it's anyone's game again.
But also, they took three at one point, didn't they? Luku took a penalty goal to make the score 28-22 on the 52nd minutes. There's that sort of interim period of 10 minutes there where, you know, the game is, I mean, hanging by a thread, and we managed to then regain some foothold in the game by actually just doing what we've done best. And we kicked to the corner a couple of times and the power comes, doesn't it? There's four or five of the backs that sort of pile into this driving maul, and you can see Don Brandt sort of set it up at the back. There's an initial shove, then two or three of the backs join. It sort of looks like it's going to break apart. But then when Don Brandt regathers the ball the second time, there's three or four lads all in a row, all bound, looking dead straight down the barrel, and Don Brandt gets over, and it's a bloody important try.
You know how good our set piece is looking at the moment as well. There's
100% when we get the ball off it, yeah. When we get the ball off that line out.
Driving more, unbelievable weapon for us. And yeah, as you say, when we've got the ball, because our line out success again wasn't brilliant in comparison to theirs. I think they won the line out percentages. But clinical, right? When we get that ball in the 22 off a penalty, we're starting to score more frequently now. Yeah. And given how many times we go to the corner and how many penalties we win when we've got Will Evans in our side, winning turnovers, and Baxter and Collier winning scrum penalties, if you know you can go to the corner and you've got a driving more weapon, you're just playing 4D chess at this point, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. But
but importantly, in that 10-minute window just before that as well, that's when you start to see a little bit of change. I think Chandler Cunningham himself comes off. It looks like he tweaked a hamstring trying to make a tackle in one of the replays I saw, but I don't know if it's cramp or anything or what actually is wrong with him. It's just what I saw on the replay. You've then got Taumafuna coming off after 47 minutes, having been dominated by Baxter all day. They bring on another brute, an absolutely enormous human being comes on. First thing he does, he has a scrum against Finn on our own 5-meter line, and we win a penalty, and it's another easy exit. So using our set piece to our advantage here, just relieving pressure, but also applying pressure. So good. So good.
And we'll talk about some more of the detail, you know. I mean, we'll talk about the scrum, we'll talk about the wider sort of feeling of the game. Slightly annoyingly, and this is again, I'd imagine this will be a little bit of the chat this week in the game, sort of reflecting, you know, when the squad go through it. Their next score in the game, it just comes from first phase attack, doesn't it? And it almost feels like it's
I'm okay with this.
It's difficult to say avoidable because they are so good. And it's again, if Will Porter kicks that ball 5 meters closer to our end of the pitch than their end of the pitch, and the ball goes off, we can move up the pitch and reset. But the fact that he just kicks it a touch deeper and the ball doesn't leave the field or doesn't leave the area where Buros can, you know, claim it and then make the quick throw in, we're just a little bit unset. And again, you know, Buros, BLBRE, or Billy Ricky, as we were calling him, give him the ball in space, and actually he goes past a couple of tired looking forwards at that point, and you can't begrudge them just for letting him watch him goes past. But
yeah, it was a clean 2-on-1 execution, wasn't it?
It was a really good score, but it just felt a touch avoidable because it was sort of first phase and all that stuff, you know. But
that's one of very few times where I felt slightly deflated, not because I think it was avoidable, but because it happened so quickly after we'd scored.
Yeah,
it just felt, oh, lads, we'd worked so hard just to reestablish a bit of dominance, and then it's just gone so, so quickly. And I think the reason it felt even more deflating is they were clearly struggling to break us down. They opted to take 3 points.
Yeah.
And the reason they've done that is because of all of the dominance we've set up at the scrum, how good our line driving mauls been and how solid our defence has been. We've made it really tricky for them. At this point, they're thinking, it's still a long way to go. Let's just cling on, stay in the fight, much like how we thought we would approach the game.
Yeah.
I remember saying to you all week, and I think I put it on Twitter as well, just stay in the fight for 60 minutes and just make it a gunslinger in the last 20. Just a straight shootout fight, fire, and anything can happen.
But it almost became that, didn't it?
It did become that, but almost the other side, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, they scored 2 in 3 or 4 minutes. Again, the next one's a bit of a chip over the top. Lewis doesn't quite gather it, and they go in and score. And at this point, they, you know, they go right underneath the sticks. So the game then becomes 36-35 with 15 to play. And suddenly you're thinking, God, we've done so well for 65 minutes.
I felt quite good, though, because I felt we're better at chasing than clinging on.
Do you know what? That's probably not. Yeah, I'm inclined to agree.
With you. Where it could have been a drop goal, it could have been a penalty, it could have been anything, it could have been literally anything. We're 1 point behind with enough time left in the game for them to feel nervous and for us to start attacking a bit.
And almost everything that we do so well comes from when we play that sort of fearless mentality sort of type situation where we go, well, we can't stop playing because we've got to score anyway. And obviously, we're almost more comfortable chasing than we are sort of holding it up or trying to slow the game down.
There is very little that I have done with my day today, but one thing I have done is I've watched the entire game back, and swing the bat seems to be the phrase.
Yeah, I've heard that a few times.
I'm having a good go. I don't know if it's something one of our coaches maybe said in the interview, but I quite like it. Just, we're going to go out all guns blazing. We're going to swing the bat. We're going to have a good go. It got name checked a few times on comms as well, but hashtag swing the bat. It certainly panned out that way, didn't it? We gave it a right good go.
At this point, I generally feel like sick, like completely physically sick. And this is one thing I've not watched back. Our driving maul try that gets chalked off.
Yes, I have watched it back. It was knocked on by Sam Riley, but Marcus Smith hits that 50-22 to set up that driving maul again.
Yeah.
It just goes to show the game management from him was brilliant. And he's one that we haven't spoken about so much on this episode so far because we've talked about the front row dominance, the return of Chandler Cunningham South and his physicality, and Will Porter coming back into the match day squad and scoring two brilliant tries. But Marcus Smith just pulled the strings through some delicious passes, really manipulated the game well. And that 50-22 sets up the driving maul. And it's a dangerous weapon for us. We pile over, absolute limbs in our section of the ground. TMO intervenes, it's knocked on. And it looks like we nearly got away with it. It took a long time for them to check.
Yeah, I remember it did take ages, didn't it?
Had it lined up. It was quite clear cut when they did look at it, but it took them a long time to even notice it. So we very, very nearly got away with one. But the emotion that you see from all of our lads when that try does get scored before it is chalked off, it just filled me with a lot more faith as well. You could see they were all pumped up and all fired up. And Ernie Herbst especially, I don't think I've ever seen him so animated. And
yeah, he was.
A late addition off the back of Launchbury pulling out in the warm-up. I thought he was excellent. I think he plays his best rugby in Europe. He's been going up in the line out again for us. And given how successful the driving maul is, good for him. Adding that string to his bow, more of a line out option now.
Two or three jumpers on Saturday, weren't there? Chandler Cunningham South went up a fair bit. We know that Steph obviously goes up a lot and Ernie went up a few times as well, which is good to see.
Yeah, big time. Big time.
But then, I mean, just going back to the game then, right? So we get that try chalked off in the, 68th minute? But then we go and score through just, you know, more Harlequins rugby. It's through the hands. Lewis Liner actually makes a lovely little delay on the pass. Sort of one-handed offload, sort of, you know, round the, I don't know how you describe it, sort of just rolls off the fingertips, looks like it goes backwards, which is absolutely fine by me. I mean, Tyrone Green's got one man to beat, just, you know, steps inside and gets...
Beats them comfortably as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, just gets another two or three yards closer. So we're, what are we, 42-36 with five to play?
Yeah, but also just before we get to that bit as well, it's the Cardiff boys, Northmore and Dommers, down the right-hand touchline that set up that.
Yeah.
Where Northmore slings it back into Dom Brandt, who carries it up another 10 to 15 metres. I think it's then maybe two more phases and it's Northmore carrying again. That hard line straightening up and creating a gap. And then it's Andre playing at 10, who puts through Lewis Liner, who then gets Tyrone Green an easy run-in. So I was really impressed with Andre and how easily he slots into 10 at the moment. It was a couple of times in that sequence of play where he slotted in and picked the right pass. And it's just reassuring for Marcus to be able to go off and do something a bit magical, knowing that you've got Andre Esterhazy that can step in and throw the pass that he might need to pass.
Well, I'm just looking at the subs here. So Marcus came off 74 minutes.
Yes, but did you see they were attempting to sub him at 70 minutes? And he's like, no, give me a couple more. Give me a couple more.
Okay, I missed that. Okay,
that's interesting. And it wasn't like Kepa Arrizabalaga.
Yeah.
Final whatever it was with Sarri, where it was just...
I'm not coming off.
Yeah, just a huge level of disrespect. It wasn't that at all. It was more of a, no, give me a couple more. I want to see this through. I'm not ready to come off. I'm ticking right now. Just keep me on. And a few moments later, he goes and buries one of their back rowers in the contact. So, yeah, he got a few more minutes. But then you're right, he did eventually come off. And that was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it? In a one-point game.
Yeah, but we picked Jared Evans on the bench, you know, must have been for a reason. And we've had this discussion before. We don't often carry reserve 10 because we don't often sub Marcus off ever. So we you know, so rarely. But, you know, the fact that we did have that reserve 10 on the bench, maybe it was just... if we were going to get a penalty at that stage, bit of tired legs, just making sure there's a fresh set of legs on for the kick or whatever it was, just maybe Jared at that sort of, at that part of the game, maybe is a slightly more natural 10 in terms of controlling field position, potentially. I don't know if that's a silly thing to say, but...
I don't know. I don't think so, but I don't know. Jared Evans is a brilliant player. Having him on the pitch is always going to be a good thing. The detriment of Marcus Smith, I'm not quite sure.
Mm.
Particularly in a game like that.
But, you know, whatever. The try comes, doesn't
there
it?
There is no more clutch player than Marcus Smith as well, so...
No.
But he must have emptied the tank. 30 degrees. Yeah. When we're talking about how tan we are. There's some good T-shirt tans on the boys, I'm sure, but...
Well, look, the try comes, doesn't it? And what is it? 77 minutes, I think Luku has the kick, and we're all expecting him to knock it over.
Yeah, the second score for Tamway as well, who I quite like the look of.
Yeah, lively. Partner,
came on, real athlete, runs with power, good speed, really physical, gets his second try. He manages to cut in a lot closer to the sticks, doesn't he?
Yeah.
You can't miss from there. Luku's a brilliant kicker, and he'd nailed them all day.
Mm.
Can't miss from there. And uncharacteristically, somehow.
Well, he missed his first kick at goal, Luku, didn't he? But off his own try.
Ah, yes.
But,
yeah.
I mean,
that wasn't much. Yeah, that was tricky as well. But still, uncharacteristic, and one of those you'd expect him to slot in his sleep. But I really like the look of their winger. And with Lewis Leiner leaving at the end of the season and Tamway sort of being fourth choice behind Penno, Beer.
Oh, are you putting your transfer hat on, are you?
I'm putting my transfer hat on. I think he'd be great. Why would you want to be fourth choice in Bordeaux when you can start in Southwest London? Come and play with Marcus Smith. He'd be good.
Get your transfer details.
The game wasn't done, was it? Even though he had missed the kick, there was still a good amount.
Oh, my God, mate.
Given how much had happened in the game, there was still plenty of time left.
I went full darts mode commentary when that kick was missed. Like, I can't speak. I couldn't believe he missed it. And at that point, you're just like, you're just holding your breath. Like, I don't know, mate. Emotionally at this stage, I'm completely spent.
There's also something, this is why I quite like the away days, and they're also addictive. But when you're down in a moment like that, and it's silence in your immediate vicinity, but the stadium's going ballistic, you really feel like you're in a cauldron. It's quite a special feeling. And you do kind of feel like you're up against it. It's us versus them.
Yeah.
When there's flags going and everybody's singing and they're going ballistic and we're clinging on, I don't know, you just feel so part of it.
I don't know. I don't really know how to sort of surmise those feelings towards the end of it, because the penalty then comes.
Well, it comes quickly, doesn't it? Because they're from the kickoff. We bully them in the scrum like we had done.
Yeah, I'm going to swear here, but we fucking hammer them all day at scrum time.
But what I really liked about it is we had the advantage, and we didn't just say, right, we'll have the penalty, please. We don't need the advantage. We'll just take the penalty. We actually played for about another 30 seconds. And that 30 seconds drew us into the 80th minute. And what that meant for the last minute, we could run down the clock for the penalty. If we'd just gone straight, we'll have it, we'll take the three. We'd have had a go at the three, but they'd have had a chance to either kick off or take a drop out, and anything can happen then. So yeah, it was 30 seconds. We talk about fine margins again. My God, what an epic European clash that was. But those fine margins, running the clock down for 30 seconds off an advantage, then take the option of having a go at the sticks. Ultimately, that was when we knew that we'd done it.
Yeah. And it's...
What are you thinking at that point as Jed's lining it up on the tee? Please don't hit the post.
yeah, literally, please don't hit the post and have the ball rebound. And I was like, I don't
send it off for a throw-in.
Honestly, I'd have been like, we've been really, really happy if Jeff didn't even like. I mean, I don't know if is there some rule about it. Does it bring the game into disrepute? I've got no idea. But generally, if he hadn't have actually lined the ball up at the sticks, if he'd just hit it straight down the left wing into touch, I would not have cared. I just thought it was absolutely brilliant. I've never seen anyone celebrate a missed penalty attempt so much. Yeah. Absolutely outrageous. And the scenes after the game, mate, were unbelievable.
Yeah. So good, isn't it?
Some of my favorite Quinns memories ever, those little sort of half an hour periods after those games. Because yeah, I remember in Montpellier, which was the first proper European trip that I did with you and, you know, Uncle Nick as well, it was a little bit subdued because we fought our way back into it in the second half and we had that second leg of the tie coming up. But we were quite solemn after the game, as well as having a really nice time. We were a little bit solemn and we just had that sort of half an hour period, just the three of us in the empty seats at Montpellier, where we went and got a beer and just sort of took in the emotion of it all and had a real sort of nice quiet moment to ourselves together. But actually, it was completely the opposite and almost as euphoric in a very different way, you know, moments after the game where, because there's no backs to the seats in the Bordeaux ground at the Stade Chaban Delmas, you can just like sort of climb down them like a climbing frame and you race down the front and you want to be as close to it as you can. And then you look behind and there's people everywhere and the players come over and, you know, we got some amazing photos after the game.
That was a good idea off the cuff from you, wasn't it? Just to hand your phone over to the players for the odd selfie of them. That was quite smart. But there is an added layer of specialness to it when you're sat in with the friends and family of the players. We were right in front of Caden Murley's mum and dad. We were right in front of Finn Baxter's dad. Marcus's family go everywhere with him, which I think is such a special thing for a family. And I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of others as well, girlfriends, etc. And just to be in it with them and sort of see the people behind the people and what it means to those people as much as the players and to us, who are literally just fans because we love Quinns. It just felt great, didn't it? It felt so cool. Our first ever Champions Cup semi-final, we did it our way. We did it against one of Europe's best in their own backyard. Club history made. So, so special.
I'm not sure if it's a stat worth sharing, but the selfie of Marcus with my phone, I think it's his girlfriend Beth as well, me, you and Uncle Nick, is our most liked post on Instagram ever. It's up to about up to about 820 likes at the minute.
Is it really? That's funny. I mean, that's cool though, isn't it? Like,
oh, so cool.
Got this global rugby superstar playing for our club, full time, goes, jogs over, grabs your phone, takes a photo. Cheers, lads. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. And all the boys were getting involved with it as well, like, because they're all coming over and, you know,
Steph gave you his socks, didn't he?
I hold them in my hand, William. I've got Steph,
you weirdo.
I've got Steph's crusty
Stop
socks. But honestly, obviously, we've been lucky, you know.
Why are they crusty? They weren't crusty when he gave them to you.
That is a really disgusting joke. I apologise for all you people out there listening to that.
You're the one that said they were crusty.
Yeah, from sweat and blood and turmoil. Not you, horrible man. But as I was about to quite eloquently say before you rudely interrupted me with that disgusting joke, we've been very lucky through the podcast to meet all some of the, you know, the amazing people that are connected with the club, but actually as well some of the players. And we obviously know Luke Northmore well through doing the live stuff in Cardiff, and we've had a bit of chat with him in the last couple of weeks just about how excited he was to get back to playing. And
good to see him with a smile on his face, wasn't it?
A massive smile on his face. And obviously, you know, we've had a bit of chat with Alex Donbrand over the last sort of course of the last couple of years. We've had Will Collier as a guest on the podcast. So when he came over, we were King Cole. He was absolutely loving it. And as you can say, then Marcus, you know, came over and gave it some beans. Steph, we had him on the podcast at the start of the year, you know, saw us, gave us a big cuddle. And I've got no idea why he just sort of handed me his socks, which I don't really know what to do with now. I don't know whether I should wash them and wear them or whether I should just keep them
Don't wash them away. Then that you're washing away all the memories.
That's what I mean. But I don't know if I want like a really sweaty, disgusting pair of socks just lingering in my room for the next however long I'm going to keep
them. Get them framed with an image from the day.
Yeah, possibly.
That selfie with Steph. You can get a nice little A4 frame or something, or an A3 frame. Get the socks framed and get that image in the middle of it.
I wonder if I should maybe donate it to the patch and get it in a frame there, or do something along those lines, or maybe I'll just keep them for myself. Maybe I'll be selfish, but I don't know.
Given it's our greatest ever European.
Yeah, might want to keep hold of, I think. That
was a loose statement for me. It wasn't our greatest ever European day. It's the greatest ever Champions Cup day.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Winning a trophy is always better, but
yeah. But I mean, yeah, the post game scenes, just some of the greatest memories that you'll ever have. Like, and again, you know, you sort of walk out of the ground and the streets of Bordeaux are just lined with people, their smiles, the weather was amazing. I actually thought the tram system was pretty eloquent and pretty well put together. So we dropped back down the road onto the tram. One of the Bordeaux lads.
It was only 24 hours, isn't it? If we'd done longer, I think we'd have enjoyed it a lot more. It's a beautiful city. I didn't really get to see. I think we saw lots of it in our 24 hours, but
yes,
with a lot more I'd have liked to have seen. But no, beautiful, beautiful place to go. Amazing to get the win.
But then we hammered down to the Dog and Duck post game. We had a few beers. We were sat outside and it got to about, I don't know, 12:30, 1 o'clock-ish. And the chap who was sort of cleaning up some tables outside the pub where we were sat in the Dog and Duck, I asked him, oh, mate, do you know sort of how long the trains run? Are they 24 hours? And he said, oh, where are you going? Back to the airport? I said, yeah. He said, you probably want to be on a tram by about 1:30. So I think we got tram.
They stopped at 1:30. So we left at about 1.
Yeah.
Made sure that we could get the full way. And it was a good decision. I mean, the place closed at 2 anyway, I think, the Dog and Ducks.
Yes.
Tap out of there an hour early, get to the airport, and then Call of Duty Terminal, I think,
on
the map. It was like just completely abandoned, and we're sort of finding anywhere we can, trying to get some food. Vending machines aren't working. I think I ended up just going for a bottle of water.
I had a bottle of water and a...
Probably for the best.
I had a bottle of water and a packet of Doritos, that was it. And then
I had an Orangina when in France.
You did have an Orangina, didn't you? Yeah. But no, we were curled over on these sort of semi-soft benches, and I took a Bordeaux flag with me home as well. I've got a few now, so I've got the Montpellier flag, I've got the Racing flag, and I've got the Bordeaux flag, so I'm ticking them all off. And
that's quite cool.
Wink, 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 bit of luck, I'll have a Toulouse flag with me in the next couple of weeks as well. But I'd rolled that up into a sort of, I mean, call it a pillow, but I was using Steph's crusty socks as a pillow to sleep on in the airport, and then you woke me up about 5 a.m. with some dribble on my face to go to the gate.
Yeah, quite a hanging video, actually. You
yes.
Stirring and talking to yourself and dribbling, but not, well, at least it sort of deterred people away. A good weekend all round. Quinn's women also ran out as winners this weekend.
Beat
Leicester in the Allianz Cup 33-19. And then London Scottish. They beat Cambridge on the road 43-13 as well. Very big win. A couple of Quinn's lads running out for them. So call it a treble winning weekend.
Right. One of the great weekends.
Toulouse up next then. Want to talk a little bit about that now, and then a bit of Sale as well. I was planning on watching the game earlier, but I slept right on through, so I missed it all. It looks like Exeter put up a good fight for the first half, and then Toulouse just do what Toulouse do.
Pretty much.
No new news there, and
no.
They're just very, very good, aren't they? And we'll go there and hashtag swing the bat.
Yeah, wasn't all plain sailing as well. Yellow card in the first 15-20 minutes, I think. Manny Faye-Wiboso looked pretty lively in the carry, but yeah, there's Toulouse just showed what they're all about, I think, in that second half. But
you've just booked flights, haven't you?
I've booked my flights, mate. Yeah, I've booked my flights.
Talk me through them. Which one are you on?
Yeah, mate, I'm all booked up. It was a bit of a stressful experience, actually, because every time I went to book something, they seem to get more and more expensive. But I'm on the 7:45 from Heathrow landing at 10:30 on Sunday morning. And then I'm going a bit of a long route home because it was the cheapest route home. But I'm flying back from Toulouse on Monday via Nantes with a 3-hour... I'm going via Nantes with a 3.5-hour stopover,
wow.
and then back to Gatwick from there.
You've done well booking that so quickly. I feel like I've just written off today completely, slept most of it. Need to sort of unpick my brain, figure out how much I've spent, what finance I'm doing, and what I'm actually doing that weekend as well. Bank holiday weekend, isn't it? Which is a pretty good one, but obviously very expensive, which is annoying. But if you can't go to Toulouse, then fear not, there is still some rugby at the Stoop that weekend. The Challenge Cup semi-final between the Sharks and Claremont will be at the Stoop because South African teams can't play at home. It's at 12:30 on Saturday, 4th of May. So if you're free in around the area, get your tickets. I mean, I don't think the club will get any money from that, but they'll get money from food,
Revenue.
drinks, and anything from the club shop. So go scratch that rugby itch and then put your feet up on Sunday and watch the Quins on the box or get down to the Cabbage Patch.
Quick little look at sale then.
Yeah, I mean, don't know the damage of the weekend apart from to myself. Chandler, I hope, is okay to go again because
Monumental
I think
on the
Will Evans
weekend.
needs the rest. I think rest Webb this weekend. He put in another huge shift. He's so important for us. We can't afford to have any injuries to him. I think my team would be. I think Marla comes straight back in after his rest week. I think it'd be good to look after Finn and make sure that he doesn't get sort of too much of a hard time. I'd maybe give him 20 minutes off the bench, or do you just rest him completely? Not sure, but I know I start Marla. I have Riley in because I think you rest quite a lot of the boys after this weekend's game. So Riley was good, had 20 minutes, got over the line again. He comes in. I think you start Dylan Lewis. You know,
Agree.
anyone that had 15, 20 minutes, I think you start them this week. Launchbury, if he was close but not fit enough for this one, but will be fit enough for Sale, then I think he comes back in.
Agree.
I thought Ine was awesome. Brilliant. And I wouldn't mind seeing him go again. I think he could go again because he hasn't had many minutes. But if
I think,
not, George Hammond. Steph, I think, has been brilliant. He's getting momentum. He's finding his best form again. But you know what he's like. You don't want to risk him, I don't think. Maybe give 20 off the bench. Or maybe he plays at six if Chandler isn't fit. But I'd have Chandler at six again if he is fit. I'd rest Webb and have Trent Holm at seven.
You'd give Trent a run out of seven, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think he's been brilliant and he
I
deserves
agree. I
a
agree
start.
with all of this.
He's fallen at a good time. I think Domas goes again.
Probably.
Yeah, because Sale's a very winnable one. Let's
You've
not
got,
sort
and
of.
the, and the, this is funny. People are going to, there's a lot of talk, especially with the Bulls stuff this weekend, which is obviously a bit different because of all their travel bollocks, blah blah blah. But we, after a game like that, you've got to find some rest for some people. And we've talked about winning our home games. The week after Sale, we've got Big Summer Kickoff against Northampton.
Which everyone will want to play in.
Almost luckily, we're going sort of blow for blow with Northampton at the minute as well. Two semi-finalists in
Yeah.
Europe, so that's gonna be a huge afternoon with a European game the week after for both sides.
But not only that, you've got to win your home games in the
And
Premiership.
you have to win at
If you want to get
Twickenham.
top four, you've got to win your home games. And yes, it's not the Stoop, but it's one we must win
So
against the top of the league.
for me, I'd be going. I think Dom Brent will go again. I think Danny comes back in at nine.
Yeah, go on, talk me through your back line.
Would you give Jared Evans a start?
Fucking hell, I wasn't ready for
I
that.
know. I just I well, just like you said, Marcus came off, and you mentioned that maybe you saw a tiny little niggle of just a bit of soreness, maybe. I don't know.
No, I
If
didn't
look,
even see a
if Marcus is
niggle.
if Marcus is fully fit and firing, I'd obviously play him. But if he is just carrying a slight little knock after the end of that game, then I don't know. But we'll see. I think Andre will go again regardless. I think it might be a time to actually, we've been saying it for a couple of weeks, I think it will be time for Luke Northmore to actually get a
Yeah,
start.
agree.
And I think the back three will remain largely the same. I think it'll be Caden,
Well,
Tyrone, Lewis.
yeah, but maybe you rest one of the back three and start Oscar Beard on the wing. I thought he had one of
Yeah,
his
maybe.
games, actually, Oscar Beard. I thought
Yeah,
he
it's been brilliant.
was quietly excellent against Bordeaux. I think he made some good decisions and certainly made some good little half breaks. So
I'd
maybe
be
he starts on the wing.
if Beard was starting off for the wing for either or, and maybe Caden or Lewis got a break and tie at 15, I'd be absolutely fine with that as well.
Yeah.
And Sale's gonna be massive. I'm not. I
Well,
don't know.
how can
It's just
Ty have a break? Who plays 15?
Anderson.
Marcus.
I don't know. We're absolutely not gonna go down that route, but we'll see. Anyway, should we quickly do some three word reviews?
Yeah. God, I've
We
forgotten about those.
because we need we nearly forgot last week as well.
Go on. I've not got any open, so I'm just going to rely on you to read some out and
Come
entertain
on
me.
then. Let's go through some three word reviews.
I bet they
So
did. Actually, no, I didn't have a look. I always like having a look.
Go on, before you look, how many this week? I think we had 85 after Glasgow. How many this week?
Oh, the way you've said that makes me think there's more, but I wouldn't have said there's more because everyone was there. Yeah, I don't know, 90.
132.
You're lying.
132.
How are we going to get through these?
I don't know. Well, I don't think we're going to have time to read people's names out very quickly, so I'm just going to go pretty much top to bottom. Web for England, better than Sarri's. Exotic location, brackets for the final. Front row dominance, Baxter, Walker, Collier. Bristanbul part two. This is a good one. No school in the morning this week. Thank you very much for that one. No school in the morning. coming of age, no yes. Fingernails neft. Quinn's pure class. A funny team, written off, lol. I love Will Evans. Will Porter magnifique. Finn fucking Baxter, we are massive, typical Quinn's game. Lions prop 2025, semi-finalist baby.
Umbrellas availed not.
Yeah, the umbrella thing was weird, wasn't it?
That was rogue. I remember looking at it thinking, oh, that's quite smart. Get a little bit of shade where you can. But then I watched it on comms and I was like, actually, everybody was saying, even their fans were a little bit pissed off about it. You've just been beaten up for the first 15 minutes and it looks like you're already needing a little bit of shelter. So,
We'll keep going. European tour continues. Oh my God. Great team performance. Porter is back. History carries on. The Quinn's way. Superb squad effort. Don't stop believing.
Swing the bat.
Swing the bat. Like it. Like it. Web is massive.
That'll do.
We're not going to do one today. Last one, because I think this is quite funny, because we've been banging this drum for a while. Will Porter South stand?
So brilliant stuff.
Well, look, I'll leave you to wrap up and send people off into the rest of their week. But just from me, thanks for another great weekend, pal. It's so much fun to do it with you and Uncle Nick. It's been absolutely amazing fun. And to everyone that was there, to all the Quinns fans, to all the Bordeaux fans, what a special time it was. And we're going to go again, hopefully, up in Manchester this weekend. And we've got another European tour to look forward to, as well as a live podcast at Big Summer Kickoff. Do not forget, we'll release more information as we get it. 12 till 1 in the Robshaw Bar. William, I will leave it to you.
Why would you support anybody else?
Unbelievable.
Come on, Quinns.
Allez, the Quinns!